Well, good morning, everyone. Thank you for welcoming me here. It's nice to see everyone friendly and a great themed session this morning. Thanks, Alyssa. Is she gone? Yeah, she's outside. Oh, there she is. That's hard to follow, isn't it? great song. I have to say I'm really glad the kids are not in here today, because this is a bit of a difficult tale, and I was sitting here wondering how on earth I would manage it with so many little children around. I have to say also I have some nervousness and reservations about getting up here today and telling you my story. You will understand as you hear it. It's nothing gruesome, don't worry. It's just, mixed feelings, conflicted loyalties. But I think it is a story that has to be told, and it's helpful for other churches to hear what happens when church discipline and authority are used unwisely. So, starting with my notes, I'll read from notes for part of the way, and then I will just ad lib the rest, because stories are best told rather than read. But I thought I had to compose the first part rather carefully. Some people have expressed interest in hearing my story about leaving an extreme Protestant sect, and so Peter invited me to tell it here today. I would like to offer a couple of disclaimers before I start. The first is that I am aware of much greater suffering around the world than anything I will ever experience, especially now as we hear of the terrible wars and slaughters in the Middle East. I'm also acutely aware of the extreme oppression of women and girls in cultures where they have no recourse to justice and no safe option to leave. So I would like to keep my story well in perspective. And my last disclaimer is that I do not claim to represent the beliefs and practices of every subgroup in the sect I was in worldwide, but only in the cities where I lived. So I was born, raised and baptised in a Christadelphian community. Christadelphia is one of several ultra-Protestant sects that arose in the mid-19th century with the conviction that it was possible to discover the whole religious truth about life on earth from studying the Bible, and that personal salvation is dependent on a correct and detailed knowledge of that truth. Such a belief system could not have developed in any other time or place than in the modern West. Only in that era could a religion be so preoccupied with the accumulation of factual knowledge over gaining spiritual insight and practical wisdom. Christadelphianism is a lay, Unitarian, dispensationalist, credo-Baptist, separatist Christian sect which holds an exclusive Christus Victor view of the atonement. In simple terms, that means they reject the Trinity, the immortal soul, heaven and hell, the devil, and infant baptism, and most would also traditionally reject the influence and assistance of the Holy Spirit. This puts them in a strange situation, somewhere between sceptics and fundamentalists, and somewhere between Old Testament Judaism and early Christianity, though they would probably be flattered with that description. They do not consider other Christian denominations to be valid. They view the world with great suspicion, and until recently, they have excommunicated people who marry out or get divorced. In fact, I think this is still commonly practiced. Christadelphians have developed their own vocabulary, whereby words often code for specific doctrines or concepts, which in turn reinforce their groupthink. As there are no educated clergy, their speakers are all part-time and under-resourced, and very few would frequent a theological library. Overall, this often leads to a flattening of biblical texts and naive or superficial interpretations. Their claim to hold the only truth regarding the Christian faith creates a tendency to overestimate their significance in the world and in history, and hence their authority over people's lives within the community, as I will soon demonstrate with my story. They call their churches ecclesias, their Sunday services are called memorial meetings, and they call their worldwide community the Brotherhood. They address each other as brother and sister, and children address their elders as uncle and auntie. Yes, it's a world all on its own. Most Christadelphians are born into the sect. The conversion rate, understandably, is very low. Their doctrines appeal to a legal engineering kind of mind, privileging facts and knowledge while dismissing feelings. There have been recurrent atonement controversies throughout Christadelphian history, because you have to be able to explain it precisely, of course. The fine points of the atonement are generally debated by men. Women are very seldom struck with atonementitis. Which brings me to a defining feature. Christadelphia is essentially a man's religion, where biblical knowledge, oratory and charisma are the measures of a man, and where authority in each ecclesia resides in an elected committee of men called arranging brethren. I'm sorry about all the terminology, but it does become necessary. Although women may vote men onto committees and speaking rosters, they have no direct say in decision-making and their voices are never heard publicly. They cannot even read the Bible aloud in meetings or greet members at the door or, as we saw today, conduct a service. Women's knowledge, skills and experience are, in general, of little interest. They may support the community in domestic and pastoral tasks, but by their regular attendance at meetings and by the work they do in the home, they are chiefly measured. And the work most valued by the community is performed by men. I would just like to note here we were talking about some men, not all. Not every man can be a leader or a speaker, and many Christadelphian men opt out of that pressure and they suffer under expectations to head their families and attend the meetings. So I was born into a conservative Christadelphian culture. There is a bit of a spectrum, not much, but there is one. And so was my husband. We met aged 16 and 19, and we were married 3 years later. Such early marriages, of course, were common. We've now been married for 34 years, coming up this December. By the age of 26, I had 3 children. Now, as a family, we were fully committed to Christadelphian doctrine, ethos, and lifestyle, and we were generally respected as stable, reliable, and peaceable, although we were held in some suspicion by many for being too liberal. For 15 years, my husband was the elected secretary, arranging brother, and a speaker in an ecclesia that we helped to found in 1992. And this was by popular demand because he's a very peaceable and wise man. I didn't study or work for pay in all this time. Women were expected to be keepers at home, being saved in childbearing or child rearing. And I didn't consciously question this until midlife. As a little girl, I had been enculturated to just accept that women had to be silent and submissive and that this was God's will. But I was always interested in Bible knowledge. I won prizes in Sunday school exams, and I would sometimes discuss points with the speakers after their talks, though this had to be done very delicately. In my late 20s, on my own initiative, I learned Hebrew privately with Israeli tutors, and I passed the Year 12 Hebrew exam at the Jewish High School here in Perth. But such learning was only for personal development, I realised. And then, when I was 35, I suddenly and unexpectedly had a huge crisis over the plight of women. This is how it happened. One of the arranging brethren in our ecclesia tried to ban women from asking questions or making comments after the midweek Bible class, or speaking at all in AGMs. Now, this was the last opportunity for women ever to say anything in any public meetings, and it wasn't much, but I was very upset at the prospective loss. And I told my husband, who was also an arranging brother, that if this motion was passed, I would never attend an AGM or Bible class again. The motion was defeated, whether by his influence or not, I don't know. But this incident seemed to flick a switch in me, and I plunged into a dark despair, I was suddenly overwhelmed with questions and protests about the role and position of women, not only in religion, but in the world and even in the universe, where we're talking about God. It was like pulling a thread, asking one forbidden question after another, which led to many more, which reeled out of the depths of my soul with such speed and urgency that I could hardly think about anything else. I was soon in deep protest against God, primarily, with doubts about God's love and justice, especially for girls. I could not, and I still can't, comprehend why God had chosen a gender by which to represent the divine, and I was frenzied with questions that could not be answered. Why God identifies and describes himself as Father? Does the creator of the universe have or need a gender? Doesn't a father imply the need for a mother? Why is male dominance all through created species with very few exceptions? And why is the Bible so much more his story than her story? And so on. The 90s was a decade of increasing awareness of systematic brutalization of women in patriarchal cultures in the world. So as well as the usual beatings and rapes, there were also horrific stories in the media of burnings, drownings, and genital mutilations, which added a vast human cost to my case against God. And as the unjust and hopeless state of womankind finally dawned on me, I began to grieve, crying all day when no one was around, and from bedtime until I finally fell asleep. Many nights in bed, I harangued my husband with religious, cultural, and biological questions. He's a biologist. And although he patiently addressed them all, I was not satisfied with the answers. I put them over and over from every possible angle in either bitter indignation or sobbing despair. I now consider that in this period, I was extraordinarily sensitive to the big picture of evil and suffering, recognising that men suffer too. But even in the depths of depression, I never saw a doctor. I didn't see my state as a mental illness, but as the legitimate result of a damning investigation into the world order, as created by God, and apparently approved, or at least enabled, by the Bible. Now, after 18 months of this, I was numb and tired and no closer to any of the answers regarding the position and hope for women. For the next 10 years, I just existed in Christadelphia and raised two more babies. But as I got older, it became harder to indulge successive waves of younger men, teenagers often, giving Bible talks with little or no experience or knowledge, and often very little skill, and who were polite but remote and uninterested if I tried to discuss anything with them. What it amounts to basically is that any male is acceptable to teach, whereas every female is not. Microaggressions, this is a new word, I just saw it on the internet last week. Microaggressions to women are common in patriarchal cultures. There are many little ways in which lack of respect is communicated, such as minimal eye contact, the use of gendered language, and addressing men's interests by the by, and so on. So there I was, now 45. In May 2006, at a Christadelphian Bible conference in Melbourne, an older woman who I knew and who knew of my struggles slipped me a booklet written by a senior Christadelphian couple in the UK. And for the first time, I read an alternative view on women and the church. I was shocked and fascinated. I could hardly believe that the authors were really saying that women could fill any role in the church. I did a lot of online research. Thank God by then there was the internet. It took me 8 months of reading to change my mind. I was afraid to change my mind. And I wondered then what I could do to get the ball rolling for reform in the Christadelphian community. So in online collaboration with these authors and with an online friend in another state who felt the same as I did, and with my son as webmaster, I launched a website in October 2007 aimed at the Christadelphian community. It contained about 100 collected articles written by various radical Christadelphians over the last 100 years who I had never known about. And I wrote some articles myself, and a few of my new friends wrote an article or two as well. all of them advocating equality of access for and spiritual service by women in the church. The site was purely a library resource, and I made no requests of our church, our ecclesia, to examine the issues or to change their policies. I knew that there was probably no point in doing that. Nonetheless, when this website went up, the reaction in WA and elsewhere was enormous and very vigorous. Various Christelphian publishers and speakers and authors, both in Australia and overseas, began to reinforce the traditional views on women through special crisis meetings and articles. A 15-part series reinforcing the traditional role for women was published by the Christadelphian magazine in Birmingham starting in March 2009. The first thing the arranging brethren did was remove my husband from all his offices and duties. Then they went to work on our sons. Our oldest son did not have very many roles, as he had released them because he was in medical school at the time. But our second son and his wife were very active and innovative in Sunday school and youth group, and they were much loved. But over the course of a year, the arranging brethren systematically removed them from every function they filled. It didn't matter that the young people and their parents protested on their behalf. Their eviction was inevitable. The whole family had to be shamed. It was like cutting out a cancer, even if you had to amputate limbs. This was their first year of marriage, in which they suffered tremendous stress and insomnia, and understandably, our son also lost his job. Then the arranging brethren demanded I remove my articles from the website, but I refused. I'll just put on the slides here. Oh dear, I pushed the wrong button. I pushed off. Shall I try it on again? No? I pushed the wrong button, sorry. This is what we need men for. Oh dear. It's all right, I can carry on. Anyway, I'll try and carry on without the slides. I received a series of letters from the arranging brethren making demands, appeals. I had the obligatory visit from one arranging brother who came out and tried to investigate my view on women and was completely nonplussed that I thought women could do anything in the church. It was like, what would you think that for? This is how far behind I was starting from. It's coming back. That's good. Takes a while to warm up. This is going to warm up behind me as you go. This was a picture taken of our family in April 2008, just before our daughter and her husband left the state. In the course of a year, over what happened to us, all three of our older children and their spouses left the state. Now, I need to explain why. If you are in a closed community like this, everybody you know is a Christadelphian, and all of your social connections and opportunities are sourced within the community. When it starts to go bad and you have no other social support, it is extremely difficult to live. And the children couldn't bear, well, they were now adults, they couldn't bear to live in a city where they might run into somebody who wouldn't speak to them, or that there was now no longer anything to go to or to do, and they didn't know how to recreate their lives. And so over the course of that year, maybe year and a half, they got other jobs and they left. So, you know, my husband and I and the two younger children were doubly bereft. It was very, very difficult. This little boy on the left over here is 18 next week, and my daughter will be 15. That's our first grandchild there. Since then, there she is again with her little brother. So you can see a few years have gone by, 7 years altogether, and we have another grandson to our daughter. Now here is the letter I received. I'm sorry it's small, I just took a photograph with my camera. This was my first letter from the Arranging Brethren, a warning and a request to remove the articles from the website. It says, we understand that there are certain interpretations of Scripture that support your beliefs and that you are sincere and passionate about those beliefs, but we believe those interpretations of Scripture are wrong and that your beliefs are mistaken. Dare we urge you to reconsider your views? We must also ask you to stop promoting your views in public and private. We understand that you have published articles on the website, and we must ask you to remove those articles from the website. Please advise us, etc., etc. Of course, I refused, and then they didn't know what they were going. Well, they did know what they were going to do next, but the problem was they had a legal problem with excommunicating me, because there was nothing in the statement of faith about women's roles, and the constitution of the ecclesia I was in also had nothing about excommunicating people for their opinions or for their activities such as this, which were not immoral activities. I wasn't behaving badly in the community, which is another reason for disfellowship. So they ransacked the constitution, and they fell back on a clause in the section of the constitution that deals with the order and arrangement of the ecclesia, which is intended to deal with things like major purchasing decisions and, you know, deciding on the colour of the carpet and whether you'll start the meeting at 10:30 in the summertime instead of 11 o'clock and so on. And in that clause said something about submission to the will of the majority or going with the greater number. And then they had a brainwave. This was how they could get rid of me. If they could get a majority of the ecclesia to say they disagree with my views, then they could then disfellowship me, which is what they did. They got up a survey, and they put on a long, one-sided information evening in which we were forbidden to speak, and they handed out this survey with less than 24 hours return time. And the next day, they even chased down lapsed or absent members to get them to vote also. There was nearly 100% return. Now, if you have a look at this survey, there are three clauses and only one tick box. Genius. Men and women are equal, more or less, it says, in the first clause. Women are precluded from teaching or exercising leadership, it says in the second clause. And brothers and sisters of this ecclesia should not be permitted to teach or promote views which are contrary to 1 and 2. And you had to either agree with them all or disagree with them all. Now, if you know the Christadelphian mindset, which you probably don't, it would be extremely difficult for a Christadelphian to tick disagree, seeing as the first two of those clauses they would agree with. So not surprisingly, it was nearly 100% return. We were advised of the results. A great majority ticked that they agree with this survey. Only 12 votes are on our side, and they were nearly all our family. So with the majority in place, they were now in a position to issue an ultimatum to me. I'll just put this up as well. Note what they say about promoting, teaching or promoting. This is also on the survey form. Is taken to mean soliciting open discussion with members of a Christadelphian meeting, widespread advertising of such views, including the use of the internet, letters to members, unsolicited email correspondence, or any communication with the intent of furthering the spread of these views. So they were looking at complete and utter silencing for life, never to be mentioned again. This is the letter advising the results. It says you must stop teaching or promoting your views in public or in private. And they quoted this clause about submitting to the others in a spirit of humility. That was out of the order and arrangements section. And they said, we want you to advise us of your response to this appeal by the 20th of May 2008. Now, as it happens, on the 22nd of May 2008, Kay Goldsworthy was ordained in Perth as the first Anglican female bishop in Australia. That was the same night when the arranging brothers would have been meeting to decide my excommunication. And I decided there was only one place that I should be on that night. And I went to St George's Cathedral to watch Kay Goldsworthy's ordination. And there was standing room only up in the back. And I was very churned up and also overwhelmed by the beautiful speeches that Archbishop Roger Herft and various other dignitaries gave on that day. And afterwards, the public were invited to the reception at Government House, and I went there also. And just chatting to some of the priests that were milling around, and I told them of my situation, one of them gave me a business card and said, if you need a place to go in the next couple of weeks, here is the address of an Anglican church in Kensington, and they will welcome you there. Well, sure enough, I received in early June a letter of the summary of the case and my disfellowship. It says here, your views are contrary to the historic and virtually universal understanding of the Christelphian Brotherhood about the teaching of Scripture on the role of sisters, etc., etc. Your promotion of these views has already caused considerable distress. Your continued promotion of these views will result in serious discord, etc., etc. And Deb, we deeply regret that we must withdraw fellowship from you given your refusal to submit to the requirements of the Ecclesia, etc. Now, it's hard to understand if you haven't been in a closed community what this means. When everybody you know, your parents, your siblings, their spouses, your children, their spouses, your children's spouses' parents, all of them are in this community. And to be disfellowshipped from the Christelphian community is a great personal crisis. I was very distressed but adamant that I would not change my mind. I mean, the letter of disfellowship had already been issued. But we received it on a Tuesday, and it was going to be announced on a Sunday. And according to our constitution, it is not effective until it's announced to the community. So between Tuesday and Sunday, my husband basically had a nervous breakdown. And he pleaded with me to reconsider. So late on Saturday afternoon, I realised I couldn't drag him over this line against his will. And late on Saturday afternoon, I agreed for him to take the articles off the website. He was immensely relieved. Our older children were all extremely disappointed. They had been very proud of me for standing up to this bullying. I was devastated because it had been a very long time and I had put a lot of work in and I really thought this was the right thing to do, to stand up to this kind of aggression. The next morning when it would have been announced that I was now no longer out of fellowship, or, you know, they reneged on it or whatever they would say, I got up early and I went to the Anglican Church in Kensington. I was so upset. I was crying so hard they must have thought someone had died. The deacon came and put her arm around me and she sat with me through the service. And when it came time for communion, she took me up to the front. Now, Christelphians do not take communion in other mainstream churches or any other churches. You know, they do not consider them to be valid. But something had broken in me and I now no longer believed that they could be right about anything. You know, if they couldn't be right about this, about women. So I took communion in the Anglican Church that morning and I have continued to attend my local Anglican Church more or less regularly for the last 5 years. As I said, our children continued to leave the state and we went through then a long, long period of extreme isolation, distress and depression. We both lost a lot of weight. Now I just sort of skip through to now because I know my time is running out. My husband thought he could recover the situation. If he could just avoid disfellowship, he thought that somehow we could find our way back into the community. But it's been very difficult for him because I have refused to go. And apart from a couple of occasions when I've gone to support him speaking at another Christadelphian ecclesia somewhere, I have never been back. And now here we are, 6 years later after this disfellowship, and I started studying at a seminary near me, at the Vos Seminary, when I turned 50, very late in life. I was delighted to be able to get recognition of prior learning for my Hebrew, which saved me two units. I am now in my fourth year of a Bachelor of Theology with honours, and I hope to graduate next year and then go on and do a PhD. And I'm very proud of that situation because it is late in life, and this is something I should have done when I was 20 or 30. Instead, I raised five wonderful children, and I'm not sorry about that. But perhaps if I hadn't gone through all of that, I wouldn't have the impetus and the desire and the insight now that I have in my studies, or the motivation as well. I went to Vos also to try and work out what I believed about Christianity and what I believed about God. Even though it is a Baptist-run seminary, they are egalitarian. They are very kind. They are very supportive. They have been very tolerant of me in my issues, and I have been really delighted to be there and to grow. I love being invited to read. It's a small thing, but I love being invited to read at my local Anglican church. I have liked to have the freedom and facility to make my main interest, which is biblical studies, also my main occupation as a full-time student. I'm glad I haven't told this story until now, 7 years after I put up the website. This must be how long it takes to recover, to build another identity, and to stop feeling angry and bitter. And also how long it takes to discover compassion for people who don't know what they don't know. I don't want to be a spoiled Westerner who lives in self-pity and resentment over exaggerated childhood abuses, as I see a lot of, when in fact all my material needs were met and a good many of my wants also. I'm just telling you this story so that you can perhaps take it as a cautionary tale. I don't know anything about this, Peter. You'll realise that some of my talks I've given here before have been about the importance of having a unique social footprint. And I really believe this is very important. We're not all supposed to know all the same people. We can't preach the gospel like that. We are of no use to anyone if we just all introspect and turn ourselves inward all the time into one closed community. We're all supposed to be almost the only Christian our friends know. And that is a wonderful thing, and that's how Jesus conducted his mission, was, you know, sending people out. And also I see the providence of God in what happened to me. What I described to you at the beginning, how integrated we were, how stable, how committed, how respected, how all of our children were in it, all of their spouses were in it. We were very okay within that community, as far as it goes. I mean, I was obviously struggling as a woman, but we weren't going anywhere. And I can see the providence of God in saying, what else will get Deb out of there? What can we do to get Deb doing what she should be doing? Only the issue on women, which I had already had a previous great crisis about. So with time, I am a lot less angry with the community, but also, sadly, an encyclopedic knowledge of the Bible will only prove an asset to someone like me, who then goes on and studies and you know, moves towards academia. That's not to say I haven't gained many things from my time in the Christadelphians. There is a part of me that will never quite think the same as everyone else, but that is what you would expect. Thank you. Yes, I am open to some questions if anyone has any. Yes?
Are your children still members of
Christadelphia? No. Our three older children and their spouses are not any longer members of the Christadelphian community, and they are all somewhere between agnosticism and atheism. This seems to be a default position for ex-Christadelphians. It's very rare for an ex-Christadelphian to join a mainstream church. I know hundreds of ex-Christadelphians, or of them, and I only know three who have. So, yeah, very unusual. I'm not quite sure how that works, but, yeah. My husband is still... He still struggles a lot with it. He attends a more liberal Christadelphian church clear across town. But it's sad for him. He's there alone. He used to be there with his wife and all his children. He used to be employed and respected, and he had his life just how he wanted it. And now he is, you know, he attends alone now and then. It's very hard for him. But one thing I forgot to say is, obviously, in this last 7 years, we've gone through a very difficult time in our marriage. For 27 years, we had a very peaceful and stable and cooperative marriage. For the last 7 years, it's been very difficult. We found there were assumptions in our marriage that we didn't verbalise, but they were there. Because obviously marrying young within the community, you assume that you will always stay in that. You will always believe the same things. You will always agree on everything. And we found that we don't anymore. So we've had to learn to stay married and to stay happily married despite having different theological views. That probably is easy for most people. It's not easy for us because that wasn't how things were. We've had to learn to find love and peace and just not talk about some things. And at this stage now, 7 years into it, we're doing very well. Praise God.
One man did that was very brave, and although we had heard stories previously a number of times about women and their struggles in authority or being outspoken in churches before, we've heard that, but your story was quite unique. Thank you for sharing that with us.
Well, thank you. It's been down for a while, but I asked him if he'd put it back up today in case anybody asked. Yes, it is there. I'll let you know what the website is. Lots of articles in there. You'll find they are a bit sectarian. They sort of aim towards a particular way of thinking, but there's some very good quality articles there, yes. How do I find it when I come to a different church? Well, it changes all the time. At first, it's quite confronting. You can imagine when I went to Kay Goldsworthy's ordination, coming from a very low church, ultra-Protestant background, and there they are with all the pomp and circumstance and the gold robes and the liturgy and everything. I was just completely overwhelmed with what was going on in my life compared to that. I was just like, oh, man. I've struggled a bit with it with the Anglican Church because I didn't know the liturgy. I don't know the calendar year. I don't know how the lectionary works. All of that stuff I do now. When I come to more informal churches like this, I must say I'm more at home. And I love the music. I mean, goodness me. We have organs playing hymns. That's it. So it's lovely to see that variety of music. It's lovely to see the kids dancing. It's nice to see all the women lining up to give announcements. You probably think that's completely normal and unremarkable. I'm just going, oh, wow. They can talk. it's a process. That's what I'm saying. You gradually are acclimatised to the differences. Yeah.